Welcome to KUOW's Speakers Forum. I'm your host, John O'Brien. In this podcast episode, if you loved listening to stories as a kid, and who didn't, maybe it's time to ask for more. Stories entertain and teach, frighten and enchant us. And a good storyteller can take it to another level. Every summer, the Palswood Storytelling Festival hosts tellers from around the country. In this excerpt, you'll hear a story by North Carolinian Donald Davis. You can hear more of our recordings on our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. Thank you to Jenny Cecil Moore for suggesting that we attend and for our recording.
My father was number 8 of 13 children. My grandfather was born in 1850. He married, and his first wife had 5 children. 3 of them died of whooping cough before they were 4 years old. He then married my grandmother, and they had 8 more children. My dad was born in 1901, and he used to tell me that when he was a child, the only thing they had to buy was salt. They lived on a farm that was way back in the north end of a county called Haywood County in North Carolina. More than half of Haywood County is Great Smoky Mountains National Park, Blue Ridge Parkway, and the Pisgah National Forest. And they didn't buy salt because they liked the taste of salt. They bought salt because that's the way you would brine things to preserve pickles and vegetables of all kinds, and that's the way you would cure meat. Basically, that's the way you would cure pork. They really didn't eat beef. They would kill 1 unweaned calf a year to get the stomach lining for rennet to make cheese. And so they would have that veal once a year, but they never had a beef cow because there was no way to preserve that meat. But you could salt the pork, you could smoke the pork, or you could hunt. And my dad used to say when they were little, they had to go hunting. He said, everything that we shot, we ate. And then one day he was telling me about one of his first jobs was to take a .22 rifle and go up to a new ground and sit above the new ground before daylight after they had planted the corn for about a week. Because just as the corn would begin to sprout, the crows would come at daylight and pull all the corn up. And so his job was to shoot the crows. And I said, did you eat the crows? Because he said they ate everything they shot. He said, no, that's not what I said. I said, everything that we shot, we used for food. We shot the crows so we'd have corn to eat. Well, it's an amazing world to think that everything they wore, they made. They raised flax. My grandmother scutched and then hackled and then dyed and wove and made linen. They did everything. Everything they ate, they produced. My grandmother would be cooking for 11 people, and every single thing she cooked had to be something she had raised, something she had put up. Well, I got to be about the 7th grade, and one of my good friends, Danny Boyd, got a .410 shotgun for Christmas. And that was really exciting, because he was going to go squirrel hunting with a shotgun. It was a .410 shotgun. It would knock the squirrel off the limb, and then you run and beat it to death with the gun butt. Yeah. Pretty soon, one of my friends, Joe Cathy, got a single-shot .22 rifle for his birthday, and he was going to go squirrel hunting with the .22 rifle. And I said to my daddy, I want to go squirrel hunting. He said, what for? I said, because I'm going to bring meat home. My daddy said, we don't need to do that. We go to the store. I said, but when you were little, you said you went hunting all the time. He said, let me tell you about the first time they ever made me go hunting. He said, remember, my daddy, my grandfather, was in the legislature. And every year they had a 40-day session in January and February. So he was always gone January and February. And Mama had to take care of all of us for those two winter months. And in December, he said to me, "Joe, we need to go out and see if we can shoot a deer so your mama will have something to feed you till I get back." He said, we got up in the middle of the night and we headed out in the dark and we went way up in the cove and he gave me a shotgun and he made me stand against a tree. And he said, "Now, Joe, don't move. Let the deer come to you. If you hear a noise and you move, you'll scare it off. I'm going to go up to another tree so we'll have twice as many chances than if we stay together." Well, my dad said he stood there by that tree. He thought he was about 12 years old. And every time 10 minutes passed, it dropped 10 degrees. It got colder and colder and colder. And then he said, "You know, we never did really get cold until one day Daddy went to town and bought a thermometer. And when he brought that thermometer home, we about froze to death. We got so cold that Mama took that thermometer and hid it in the bottom of the cedar chest so we wouldn't be so cold anymore after that." He said, "But that night, it didn't matter if we had a thermometer or not. It just got colder and colder and colder, and I thought, I'm going to freeze to death. We don't need to shoot a deer because I'm going to be dead." And I stood there, and I stood there, and finally, I heard something behind me. It was moving. I could hear it coming through the leaves and through the brush of the woods, and I wanted to turn around and look, but Daddy had said, "Don't move, let it come to you. Don't move, let it come to you." And I stood there and stood there and stood there, and very gradually I could see something moving, and here it came, slowly, slowly around in front of me through the woods. It was a big buck deer. It had 5 points on its antlers, and walking right against its side was a doe. And it came on around, and when it got right in front of me, it stopped. It was a perfect shot. And I very slowly eased the shotgun up to my shoulder. And when I got it aimed, just as I began to slip my finger in close to the trigger, at that moment, the deer looked straight at me. It looked right in my eyes. And I could see it breathing and its breath making mist in the cold air. And I could see its pulse in its neck. And it wouldn't look away. It just looked straight at me, and I looked straight at it. And we stood there. And then the deer turned, and the buck looked at the doe like he was telling her goodbye. And I couldn't pull the trigger. I just stood there and we looked at each other. And we kept looking at each other. And I didn't realize that while the deer and I were staring at each other, the shotgun was gradually sinking, getting lower and lower and lower. And I didn't realize that as the shotgun was sinking, my finger was getting tighter on the trigger. And all of a sudden, the shotgun went blam and knocked me flat on the ground. And as soon as I looked up, both the deer were gone. And Daddy came running. Joe, did you get one? Did you get one? Did you get one? And I stood up and he said, "What did you shoot?" And I pointed at the hole in the ground. And then I told him the whole story. And instead of getting mad at me, he said, "Joe, if that deer had done me like that, I wouldn't have been able to shoot it either." He said, "Son, here's what you need to tell your friends. When they tell you that hunting is a sport, you tell them that in a sport, half the time the other side wins. And if you want hunting to be a sport, leave your gun at home and go barehanded. And then it'll be fair. He said, one of the greatest days in my life was when I got a job and got a paycheck. And I knew I could go to the grocery store and buy meat. And that I would never again have to stand in the woods and freeze. But I was about 13 years old. Do you think I was impressed? I wanted to go out in the woods and shoot something. And I kept begging and I kept begging. And I'd tell him about my friends that would go and how my friend Joe had now shot a deer and how Danny would go get squirrels. And finally one day my daddy had enough and he said, okay, I think it's time for you to go squirrel hunting. Pick somebody to go with you and come over here to the house one afternoon and I'll go out and show you how to shoot. See, I knew that there were two guns in the closet at our house. I knew that because those guns had stories that went with them. One of them was what my daddy called a Model 63 Winchester auto-loading 22. It held 14 bullets in the gun stock, and it would shoot 14 times as fast as you could pull the trigger. It was my daddy's mother's 22. She had given it to him when she got too old to shoot, and he told me that was the gun he had used to shoot the crows at the cornfield. The other gun in the closet was a pump-action 20-gauge shotgun. And it had a story that went with it, too. It was in Prohibition. My parents were not married yet, and my daddy boarded with a family named the Blaylocks. One night, the Blaylocks were not home. My dad was there by himself. He was in the kitchen fixing him something to eat when there was a knock at the kitchen door. He opened the kitchen door, and there stood a man with a shotgun who said to my daddy, I know John Blaylock has some whiskey, and I want it. And my dad said he knew that John Blaylock had some whiskey, too. And it was in the kitchen cabinet. And he went over and he got down the bottle of illegal whiskey. And he walked over and he gave it to the man who was holding the shotgun on him. The man reached out and took the bottle of whiskey. But he couldn't get the lid off. So he handed my daddy the shotgun. And he took the lid off the whiskey, took a drink, turned around, walked away. And my dad closed the door and kept the shotgun. And so now it was sitting there in the closet. Well, I invited my best friend, David Morgan, to go squirrel hunting with me. He came over to our house one afternoon, and my dad took us out into the woods, and we killed about 25 tin cans. Yeah. And now we were trained and ready to go. Well, the plan was on the next Friday afternoon when school was out, we would take my daddy's old 51 Plymouth and we would go out to my Uncle Frank's house. That was the farm where my dad had grown up. And we would go up into the cove, spend the night, and early before daylight the next morning, we would go out and we would bring game home to our families. Now, David didn't have a gun. And my dad said, that's okay. He can use the shotgun. We knew nothing about squirrel hunting. And from the start, things did not go well. See, our plan was to go out, drive up in the cove, have a nice camping trip, cook our supper, pitch our tent, spend the night. That afternoon, by the time we had bought our groceries and got to Uncle Frank's house, it was almost dark. So we did drive in the dark up in the cove. We got the car stuck once. Uncle Frank came with a tractor and pulled us out. By now, it was dead dark. And so instead of pitching a tent, we decided the smart thing to do. See, but now we were 16 years old. We were smart. The smart thing to do was sleep in the car. And when it was all over, we actually told one another that we had slept. Way in the night, we decided it was time to get up so we would have a head start on the dawn. And we headed on up in the cove. I had the .22. David had the shotgun. We found what looked like a good place. We could see squirrel nests here and there in the trees, and we would wait for it to begin to break daylight, and the squirrels would come out. Well, sure enough, a little squirrel came down a tree. And David said, "Which one of us is going to shoot it?" I said, "You go first." He got the 20-gauge shotgun, shot the squirrel. We found the head way over there. And the tail was way over there. We never saw the rest of the squirrel. And that's when we knew my daddy had sent us off squirrel hunting with a 20-gauge shotgun just to hear what happened to us along the way. We took the shotgun back and put it in the car and decided we would take turns with the .22 rifle. We spent most of that morning, and by the time the morning was over, we had shot 3 squirrels. That's enough. Because David told me, I could have all 3 of them. He didn't need to take one home where he lived with his grandmother. So we headed home. I took David home, drove back up to our house, and I got out. I'd taken my daddy's old duckback hunting coat, and I had those squirrels stuck in the pocket in the back. And I was very proud when he opened the door, said, "Did you get anything?" And out by their tails, I pulled my trophies, 3 fat gray squirrels. But Dad said, "That is wonderful. That'll be a good supper for us tonight." What? "Well, you shot them, we're going to eat them." "What for?" "For supper. Because if you shoot something, you got to eat it." He said, let's go around so you can clean them. I said, "Do what?" "So you can clean them." "I don't know how to clean them." "I'll tell you." Notice he did not say, "I will show you." No, "I will tell you." He came out from the kitchen with a sharp knife and a dish pan. And we went around into the backyard and he said, "Now here's what you do. Get hold of the squirrel and take the knife." He said, "There are different ways you can do this, but I'll show you the easiest way for the first time." And he got me to cut the skin of the squirrel right around the middle, right halfway between its head and its tail. And then he said, "Now get your fingers in there. Get them, this one in there under the skin. And then get the under the skin. And now you start pulling toward both ends. And pull and pull and pull." And the skin started turning wrong side out. Here this thing started coming out of there. And it kept coming. And finally the worst part is, its skin, it's over its head and over its tail. And we had this little old cat that his name was Pitiful. And Pitiful came around the house just as I had the skin half of that squirrel. And that cat saw what was happening. And that cat stood up on its hind legs. And its eyes got about that big. And it went, "Arr!" and turned and ran the other direction and went to the top of a pine tree. And wouldn't come down. Finally, I got the skin off of 3 squirrels. And then I had to gut them. And then I had to cut their heads off. And then cut their tails off. But my daddy said, "Keep their tails because they have meat on them." Like a pencil has meat on it. And then we took that stuff inside to my mother. I said, "Oh, Lucille, look, here's the squirrels. Now you can fix supper." And my dad said, "I've planned the menu. We're going to have a nice meal tonight, like we used to have when I was growing up and we had to go out in the woods and hunt and get our meat." And my mother fixed for supper that night fried squirrel parts with this white, flour gravy. It was all white looking. And we had white cornmeal cornbread and white canned hominy. The whole plate was one color. And we sat down at the table, and my daddy actually had the nerve to bless that stuff. I said, "Oh, this is going to be so good." And he picked up a piece and started chewing on it. And my mother, my little brother, and I just looked at ours. And my dad started eating another piece. "Oh, it's so good. It's just like me. It reminds me when I was your age." And I looked at my mother and I said, "Mama, do you think the grocery store is still open?" She said, "I think Emmett Ballantyne's is still open." And all three of us in unison pushed our plates over toward my daddy. And we got in our car and we went to Ballantyne's Superette. And we purchased a gourmet meal of Swanson's frozen TV dinners. And we came back home and had a wonderful dinner. So see, when people hear that people like Adam and Donald grew up in the Appalachian Mountains, they make assumptions. They ask us questions about all kinds of things. Did you see people making whiskey? Did you do this? Did you grow up hunting? And I have a very clear answer. Yes. I can hunt any grocery store within 100 miles. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
That's it for this podcast of Speakers Forum. Again, you can hear the full version on our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. KUOW's Jenny Cecil Moore attended the Palswood Storytelling Festival on July 23rd and brought back our recordings. Thanks to her for that. Tune in again soon.